I'm going to, and it is a song, I think I just said it was a beautiful song, and I meant to be saying a psalm, but all the psalms are songs. They were poetry written to be sung. And I know some songs from decades ago that were scriptures put to music, and I still remember them totally easily just because the ones that were in songs stuck. They're beautiful. And there's something special about music that God created to delight us and to give delight to others, to share delight together when we're singing. And singing just has a special way of making things go deep inside you. And these psalms were all written to be sung. And of course, I don't know what melody was the one that the psalm writer was using when he first wrote any individual song. With their poetry, their music, and it's good to remember that sometimes. This is a really beautiful one. I thought we would just read it through and then go back and look at some of the parts in it. And this is a Psalm of David. This is one of the ones that he wrote. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night shows knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone throughout all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them has he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of heaven, and his circuit to the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping of them there is great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength, my rock. That's that word there. Thy strength also means rock, and my redeemer. The psalm is beautiful, just as poetry. But it's beautiful because it's also praising something that's beautiful. The fact that there is a God who actually does, you know, take things seriously and actually can tell the difference between what is good and what's evil, and it's very serious business to him to deal with the fact that there's good and evil in the world, that people can choose good or evil, and that just the Lord sees a difference. So I'm kind of telling that part too much in advance. I guess I should just go back to saying that the psalm ends with David calling God his strength or his rock, like the rock of refuge. They're up on a high rock, and you can see all around you. You can see the countryside, and you gain the perspective that you need to see where you are, where your goals are, where some pitfalls might be. And the rock is also a strong shelter. You can hide behind its shade to get cool, but it's also a strong shelter. It's something that's not going to move or fall down, even if your enemies came and marched against you. The rock is a good place to be. It's a strong place and stronghold. And in the psalm, David is celebrating God's character as being something that you can count on. God's character as being something that's not going to change, his mercy, as well as his desire and intention to clean up this world. Those things are all things we can count on. And in Hebrews it says, or James? Hebrews? Which one is it? There is no variableness or shadow of turning. with him. And he starts out, David starts out talking about nature, about how it's obvious by being outside and looking at the sky or looking at a tree or any of the things in nature that can make us have a sigh of, oh man, that is so beautiful. Or looking at the stars at night, you just go, wow. Those things God created and are a message that's not with words, it's a visual message to us that there is a creator and that he cared. He obviously took time to make beautiful things, and he is wow. He is a wow. And that God speaks through nature, and it's something where, you know, don't have to learn another foreign language for that message. It is a universal language, and it's one that you don't have to be super smart to be able to see and hear. It's something that can be felt by everyone. And then he starts talking about the sun. Okay, we've got the heavens declare the glory of God. God is speaking through nature. And even his greatest expression of himself was when he became living flesh. Okay, Jesus was the Word. And this is one of God's vehicles for speaking is nature. And this word firmament just means the sky or the heavens. Show us his handiwork. That's it. Like, put the picture in your mind of looking at stars at night and going, wow. And he mentions that, you know, day after day, night to night, this message is always being spoken. It's that, you know, God doesn't ever stop speaking this message of wonder and beauty. Because, you know, stars are, you know, every night, you can count on, that message is still going to be there. And he talks about the sky, how you can see it, you know, anywhere you are on Earth, you will be able to see the sky, the sun, the moon, the clouds, and it's through the whole Earth, not just our portion of the Earth, but the whole world, the whole Earth. And then he starts talking about the sun, the sun is, he's kind of got this stuff that's in parentheses that we'll look at in just a minute, but basically he's speaking of the sun next because it too is a picture of God not changing. The sun is, you can count on it to rise in the morning, and you can count on it to go through the whole, you know, section of the sky that we see from start to finish. We can count on it being there every day, and it's not like there's any place on Earth you can just go and say, well, the sun's rays never hit here. He is unchanging. And he's compared to the sun is unchanging, and God is unchanging. The sun here is a picture of God's characteristic, again, of totally everything he means, everything he says, he means and says it always, yesterday, today, forever. And the sun, you know, just like the sun coming up, and the sun is described as being like a bridegroom who's coming out of wherever he was getting all stiffied up and coming out to do the wedding ceremony, to do the marriage. Or a man who is strong and is like getting ready to go run his race. This is a guy who likes to be in the races. This isn't somebody whose, you know, grandmother made him go run the race and he didn't want to, and he's being dragged there, you know, kicking and screaming. This is a strong man going, yeah, I'm ready for this. I want to do this. And that God, too, in his unchangingness, like the sun, God, it is his intention. This is what he's planned on. This is what he wants to do. And then we move into the law of the Lord. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. And all through this next section, they're going to be using a lot, there's a lot of words that all just basically means the things that God said and had revealed up to this point in time. The law, the testimony, statutes, commandment, judgments, those are all different words that are referring to the same thing. what God had revealed to the Israelites thus far. His creation, history, the Ten Commandments, definitely, but also many other things that he told them. And we sometimes forget that in the Old Testament, he also told them that he prefers mercy to sacrifice, and that the weightier matters of the law are grace and mercy, and that he doesn't, you know, there are places in the Old Testament where it's already written that he doesn't want us to hold grudges forever. Some of the things that are the coolest in the New Testament were things that God did say before as well. I guess because he always means those truths. Those are unchanging. Those are things that he values. And David starts talking about that in verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. And this whole passage, I don't know if you've I can feel David's sincere passion here. And he was a very sincere, passionate person. And you may have read or heard the story where the Ark of the Covenant is being moved, and David just dances in front of it the whole way, runs and dances in like complete abandon. So much that his wife was like, "Oh, David, why are you doing that?" But complete abandon. And this same passion I feel in this psalm, when he is contemplating the beauty, the trustworthiness, the goodness of God. And at first, somebody might say, wait a minute, the law of the Lord is perfect to converting the soul, and so on. I get down to rejoicing the heart and thinking, wait, but when somebody tells me all the rules I have to do, that doesn't exactly make me excited and dance a dance. But that's not what's being talked about here. Hey, good to see you. This is not just the Ten Commandments, but everything that God had revealed about himself so far, including the things that we understand the best and are relieved at the most and love him for, his mercy. He remembers that we are dust and has mercy upon us. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. One cool thing is that we are imperfect, our world is imperfect, but there is a beautiful perfection that we will see fully one day and get glimpses of it now, and that is the Lord. And it converts the soul, it changes us. God's Spirit, God's Word, can actually change us, alter us, make us better, or make us the self, more the self that God designs us to be. He can certainly do things like helping a heart that is harboring unforgiveness forgive, and that makes a huge change. Or somebody who has been injured emotionally can be healed, and that's a change. But and also God will also, anybody and everybody who wants to be more aware of what is right and what's good and what's most important for me to be doing, he always answers that request. And that changes us. The desire for it and the doing of it will always bring your heart and soul into a better place where God can show you things to do that are even harder, but give you, that much more joy as well. I love that it says the testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple, because there again we're reminded that God's not needing us to be super intelligent or super scholarly or anything like that. Even the most simple person or most simple-minded person, God is a God who is accessible to them. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. And here's that passion, rejoicing. David is rejoicing that there is a God who is good, a God that he can love and who loves him. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. And again, God's truth can bring us the light just to know for sure what is the truth and for the truth that it is, that there is a good God who cares about us, who cares about things in general, who loves us, and who is going to clean up this one worse planet. The judgments, the fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. And, you know, getting clean is a pleasure, you know. When you're really icky and grody and then you finally get to take a bath or a shower, it feels good. It's a blessing. And, you know, there are many people in the world who don't get to enjoy that blessing because, you know, they're living in some awful area where there isn't even any, you know, water that we would consider clean water. Something that is clean, that is a wonder. And we value things that are clean. The snow when it falls, nobody stepped on it yet. Or the snow that we catch and we, you know, we lick the snowflakes off our hand. Or springs. They make everybody happy because there they are just bubbling up out of the ground and it's pure, clean water. And that's what David, that's how David is describing the fear of the Lord is clean. And enduring forever. And it's not going to, you know, Lord, the purity is not going to go away. Enduring forever. It's one of the things we'll still be able to rejoice in heaven and enjoy. Where there's that river of life that we get to be in. All these things that God has spoken or revealed about himself, more to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. And then David says, moreover, by them is thy servant warned. He's like, you're beautiful, God. You're beautiful. You're amazing. You're wow. It's so wonderful to know that there's somebody, you know, that there's a God who is completely good. A God that loves me. And then after getting totally excited and impassioned about that, David mentions, oh yes, and also if you keep God's laws, follow his directions, you know, they make a good warning for you. You'll stay out of snares and different pitfalls than you would have otherwise. And you know, there's a reward in living those out and going by those rules. But cool thing is in this psalm is that David doesn't start thinking about how what God has said benefits him, you know, in a practical way until after, you know, that's kind of an afterthought for him. And oh yeah, this is good for me too and everything. But most of the time, and certainly the first thing that just fills his mind and kind of came gushing out of his heart for five verses is just rejoicing in seeing a glimpse of the kind of God that God is. And when you think about what was going on in the world in general, at the time this psalm was written, most cultures had most of them did one of these two things. Most of them either thought that their gods were kind of like the Greek gods, they're kind of like people who have more power than normal people do, and so you don't want to get on their bad side. And mostly they don't really care about us, though, unless we do something to annoy them. But they're just kind of, you know, just whatever, okay. And the other version, or the other cultures that didn't have something kind of weak and kind of disinterested and weak, didn't really care that the world was going to pot as long as it didn't, you know, bother them. That's what the Greek and Roman gods were like. The other cultures had even worse, worse gods. In those other cultures, they were gods who lusted terribly after power. And they wanted sacrifice, most of them human sacrifice, some of them even sacrifice of infants. I mean, these were bad dudes. Powerful, yes. Terrible, yes. And David realizes that his God is neither of those things. He's not some weak-ish God who really doesn't even notice us and you know, doesn't really care about right and wrong. It's just kind of like, whatever bothers me or doesn't bother me. You know, Zeus and all those guys. And David's God was not a horrible God who wanted human sacrifice. He was going to be the God who would sacrifice himself for us instead of demanding that very great price be paid ourselves. And David, more than we probably, could really appreciate what kind of God, the real God, the living God, is. Not only real, but also one that doesn't just go, oh, well, I don't care about what's going on. I don't hers and with humans. He cares, he watches every moment, and then that picture of the sun, you know, constantly, every day, it's going to move through the sky, and there's not going to be a place that it doesn't shine. And that's the kind of God that David knew his God was. And so no wonder he was, you know, it helps to even further help us to be in touch with that passion that David had. He did have an awesome God. He did have a wow God. And you can feel the joy that comes along with his passion for God, because he's loving God, not because like God's going to punish him if he doesn't. He's loving him because he's amazing, and he's pure, and he's good, and David just is so excited about that, that it brings joy, even for us, to read what was on David's mind. He also has some wise requests for God. Here he says, "Who can understand his errors? Cleanse me from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins." He's saying, like, I probably have sins that I don't even know I'm doing. God, please reveal those to me and purge those. And then he also says, don't let the sins that I do have dominion over me. He's not going to be perfect, but he wants to be good like God, and he invites God to help him see any sins that he might be blind to. And then he also he wants sin to not have the main power in his life. We all sin every day, but once you know the Lord and walk with him, it can be that your life is not kind of mainly under the control of the sins, of your mistakes. They don't have dominion over you, and your nature has been changed. And when he says, then I'll be upright and innocent from the great transgression, I'm gathering the great transgression is pride. Don't know for sure, but that's what it seems like to me, since he's just been talking about his own sins that he's probably not even aware of, but which exist, and he asked God to get rid of them, you know, point out those things and help me get rid of them. And then he ends with a great request that is appropriate for every person, every time period, every part of the world. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart. And again, remember in the New Testament, Jesus talks a lot about people who are obeying all the outward laws, but not inside in their heart. And here's this concept in the Old Testament too. Not only let the words that come out of my mouth be good, but also the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. O Lord,